Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 38, Apple Orchards and Wedding Feasts.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. In this show, we're continuing with the story of Pwyll from the first branch of the Welsh Mabinogion. But first, the contact details.
If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or have a look at all the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
And we've got all sorts of stuff there, haven't we?
Yeah.
But specifically, if you have a look at the show notes for this show, you can find out about the people that are in the story, their names, what they look like written down, maps of where the events might have taken place.
Yep.
And all the sources that we used to get the story built together in the first place.
Yes. Very interesting stuff.
So have we got any news and views?
It's not really Celtic, but it is rather fascinating.
Okay.
In a place called Portsmouth in Hampshire in England, just recently, there has been discovered behind an old church, which is being knocked down, a brand new holy well that nobody knew anything about.
Really?
Now, it's Roman, and they have discovered three carcasses of dogs in this well.
Ooh.
As well as Roman artifacts such as rings and pendants.
Okay, was this originally a Roman baths or something, or just the well?
No, that's the whole point. It was just a well.
Okay.
Now, we don't know who it was dedicated to, but they're still excavating, and there's belief that it's actually pre-Roman, which means that it may have been important to the Celtic tribes.
A Roman well that was pre-Roman?
At the moment, it's dated to Roman.
I see. So you mean it was kind of like constructed in the period of Roman occupation?
At the moment, yeah. But they think it may have actually been pre-Roman. We're waiting for more evidence. Obviously, they're going deeper and deeper. I know, and it's only just been found this year.
Okay, so if you find anything else out, can you let us know?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of holy wells around that are suddenly being discovered, aren't there?
Yeah, super stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. So let's get straight into the story.
Good idea.
Okay, so remind us of what's happened so far.
In our last episode, Pwyll had met and fallen in love with Rhiannon, the most beautiful and glorious fey lady robed in golden silk. She was mounted on a white mare by the ancient she-mound, the Gorsedd Arberth. Gathering his true companions, he'd waited for a whole year, and then travelled into the other world to make her his bride. There, he was tricked by the man that she had been betrothed to into giving her up. In deep depression, our hero returns to the lands of Dyved, in the Island of the Mighty. Time is a very strange thing. Every mortal, and especially every warrior, is vitally aware that once it has started at the beginning, it will inevitably finish at the end. From the moment when a man is born to the moment when he dies, his life is one continual stream of activity, presumably broken down into nice, easy-to-count pieces. The druids aren't quite so sure, though, and Pwyll knew that they will tell those that listen that all things that live and move do so in cycles, in great rhythms, like breathing. They will also explain to those that stay listening, or are too drunk to care, that the time between spaces can be stretched out or squashed up. Any young maiden nestled in the strong arms of her love, deep in the mossy dells, will tell you how fast those minutes flow by. And likewise, any child waiting for his supper with an empty growling belly will tell you how slowly dinner time comes around. For Puig, the next year crawled by very slowly indeed. At times it seemed to stretch so thin that he thought his mind would snap if it lasted any longer. Over the year, the word slowly got round the kingdom of Dyved that their lord Puig had very nearly had a fairy bride, a queen that would have brought fertility back to the land, and joy back to their now despondent lord. The wonders of the summer land that the true companions had visited became a tale of legend that would last many lifetimes. It is true, though, that most of the people of Dyved could feel and were touched by the deep sadness of their lord. The summer was blistering hot, and tempers flared, with many border struggles to resolve, and Puig dealt with them harshly. Even the Druid Council was loath to broach the subject of an heir with him, until the winter brought slightly cooler breezes to the land. To them all, he would say that he would take a woman to wife when it was time, and when he was good and ready. It was only to his chief druid, Pendaran, that he told the whole story, and Pendaran shook his head slowly, very slowly, with his eyes downcast as he heard the tale. As the time of Beltane, or Calan Mai, again approached, Puig gathered his proud companions and told them to prepare for another wedding feast, such as they had witnessed the year before. They were all confused, but eager to please their lord, and after Puig's court had celebrated the festival, they all set off for the passage to the Otherworld, and started the journey once more into the glorious realms of Hyveidd. This time, however, Puig called them to a halt in the beautiful orchard within sight of the magnificent white castle, the orchard that was always ripe with sweet red apples of a size and type never seen in Dyved, and they dismounted. They could all hear the sounds of merrymaking coming from the castle, and Delwyn noticed the wistful look in her lord's eyes before he turned to them and told them to wait for him. He slung a hunting horn around his neck and told them to come running when he blew it. And then he unstrapped the travel roll on the back of his mare and threw beggar's clothes over his own clothes and rags around his feet. The knights looked at him in some surprise, but he winked at them, and with bent back he smeared some dirt on his face and hands, picked up a crooked staff, and walked off to the castle. He came to the gigantic gates, and the elfin guards didn't even glance at him as he mingled with the other commoners outside the great hall, those who were hoping to celebrate with their king and share in the generosity of their nobles after the forthcoming celebrations. He made his way through the crowd and entered the great hall. There sat the beautiful Rhiannon, looking every much as regal as a queen should, in flowing yellow satin gown, with Gwawl on her right in his green robes, and a mass of long flowing auburn hair. And the ancient king Hyveidd sat to their left, all seeming to be greatly enjoying the celebrations. The laughter rang hollowly in Puig's ears as he meandered amongst the tables, making his way slowly towards the front. He strained to hear what Rhiannon was saying. Could she have played him for a fool? Was this man her rightful groom in the coming wedding? And was he here just as a favourite jester to entertain the court with his forthcoming antics? Puig was close enough to see the smiles on their faces now. He managed to catch Rhiannon's eyes as she quickly glanced around the room and saw a deep glow flare in them. Only for a second, but enough for Puig to see the recognition, and that the fires of joy burned quick and bright within her. Now he was sure, and leaning on his stick, he shambled up to the top table. Gwawl looked down at him and wondered what business this beggar could have at his wedding feast.
Blessings of the great old ones be upon you, my man. The welcome of this hall be upon you.
I thank you kindly, my lord. May the gods repay you for your kindness. If it pleases you, may I have a moment of your time for a request I have to make?
You are welcome to a moment, and if your request is reasonable, you shall have it.
Oh, it is reasonable, my lord. I only ask to ward off my hunger.
Puig shuffled nearer to the table and withdrew a small leather bag from inside his rags.
If it pleases you, my lord, could you see your way to filling my little bag with food? If you will, then I shall bless you and your good lady and be on my way.
That is indeed a reasonable request, and gladly you shall have it. Bring him food.
Gwawl waved one hand at Puig, as if to wave him away, and the other at some servants carrying platters laden with beautifully cooked food. A great number of them rushed to fulfil the host's demands, and one by one they approached Puig, who opened the neck of his bag, and they tipped whole platters of food into it. Gwawl began to look askance at the beggar as the sixth servant approached, and the bag looked no fuller than it had been at the start. He held up his hand then, and looked straight at the beggar.
Friend, will your bag ever be full?
Puig then bent his back a little further, and looked up at the nobleman from under his hood. He opened the neck of the bag a little wider, holding it up for Gwawl to see that there was still a bit more space inside.
Oh, now that's the strange thing, my lord. But as the gods are my witness, it never will be full, unless a powerful nobleman, one endowed with much land and property, gets up and treads down the food with both feet, saying, enough has been put in here.
My noble lord Gwawl, son of Cleed, with all your lands, that is an easy thing for you to do. Do it quickly and let's be rid of this beggar and his magic bag.
Gwawl stood up quickly, angry at this upstart beggar, and eager to impress his soon-to-be bride. He placed one hand on the table and leapt across it, meaning to land in front of the beggar and frighten the impudent man. As he leapt, however, Puig stretched the opening of the bag wide and went down onto one knee, making sure that Gwawl's feet landed square in the middle of the bag. Gwawl made no attempt to stop him, for all he had to do was press the food down and say enough has been put in here and the job would be done. As he landed, however, Puig quickly stood up and pulled the bag right over the top of Gwawl's head. He held on tight to the bunch of leather at the top as the nobleman went rolling over onto the floor. Quickly, Puig tied the top of the bag tight. Gwawl's retinue and his knights were beginning to move towards the centre of the hall, but Puig pulled the hunting horn out from inside his beggar's rags and blew three long blasts on it, halting them in their tracks. Only a few short moments later, his own true and proud companions burst into the courtyard, leaping down from their horses and holding Gwawl's men at bay with their spears. Puig watched them carefully as he slowly peeled the layers of rags from his clothes and feet. He dragged the bag out into the centre of the room and walked up to a hand basin to wash the dirt from his face and hands. He looked around then, and saw that even though old Hvaes was watching all the events with great intensity, Rhiannon was smiling broadly at him. Puig walked up to the top table and bowed to the king, and then bowed even lower to Rhiannon, smiling so brightly that he lit up the room. Hvaes began to nod to himself, as if he had come to some sudden understanding and a conclusion. Delwyn was the first of Puig's men to enter the hall then, and she gave the bag a nasty kick as she passed by. She pointedly asked,
"What is in there?"
"It's a badger."
The next man came in then and hit the bag with a stick, saying,
"What's in there?"
And Delwyn answered, saying,
"That's a badger, that is. We're playing badger in the bag."
One by one, his men came in, each one striking the bag and inquiring as to its contents, and the preceding man answering that it was a badger within the bag. Now, it's a sad thing that long ago, when life was short and cruel, the hunters in the fields would catch badgers for food and sport. A bag would be placed over one of the entrances to the badger's set, and they would chase the animal out of its lair. And when it was caught, they would beat poor Badger to death. They say that this was the first time that the game of Badger in the Bag was played. And whether that's true or not, it is impossible to say. But the cruelty of the mortals was clearly shocking to the Shining Ones, who stood watching with their mouths agape.
Lord, please listen to me. For a man of my station to be killed in a bag like this is no fitting death.
Yveith stirred then and coughed lightly. The whole hall turned to him. Rhiannon stopped smiling so broadly and waited for her father to speak. He stood and looked straight at Puig.
Puig, Lord of the mortal realm known as David and named as Prince of Anun. What he says is true. That is no fitting way for any noble man to die. You should listen to him.
Puig looked at the ancient king, standing tall behind the top table, his nobility streaming from him in waves. Puig glanced at Rhiannon, who was sat calmly with her hands in her lap, watching her father carefully.
I agree with you, my lord. I shall follow your advice in this matter.
Rhiannon stood then and first faced her father, making sure that she had gathered his eyes, and then turned to face Puig.
And this is my advice to you, my lord. Now that you are back at my side, where you belong, at our wedding feast, you are expected to give favours and gifts to all the people here, inside as well as outside, including all of the musicians and entertainers.
She paused, letting this sink in, while she walked around the top table to stand at Puig's side, making her message to the court that much clearer. She looked down at the bag before them both.
Free Gwal, but let him give those gifts to everyone on your behalf. Let him also promise that he will seek no claim or vengeance on you. That should be enough punishment for him.
He would accept that gladly.
And I too shall accept it gladly, if that be the advice of both Hyveidd Hen and my future wife Rhiannon.
That is indeed our
that
advice.
That is indeed our advice. Then it is decided. Son of Cleed, name hostages and guarantors for yourself. We will stand for him until his own men are here to take his place. So shall it be, Lord.
So Puig reached down and untied the bag then, and the bleeding and bruised body of Gwal tumbled out onto the floor. For a while he could not move, and then slowly he rose to his knees until he stood shakily before the company. A score of his knights were released to aid their lord, and they stood by him anxiously, each pledging themselves hostage for their lord's good faith. Hyveidd turned his gaze to Puig, and his brows furrowed as he said,
"Now, ask Gwal for your own sureties, although this court knows those that ought to be asked for.
Let the mortal man draw up his own conditions.
I shall be content to follow the list that Rhiannon has drawn up."
Long they discussed how the agreement could be guaranteed, and eventually they reached accord. Gwal then singled out several of his closest kin from his companions and said,
"Lord, I need to bathe, for I am injured and have received many wounds. With your permission, I will depart. I will leave my kinsmen here in my stead to answer all those who make requests of you. The gifts I have promised shall be delivered to all the people and the entertainers."
"Gladly, Lord. Do as you propose."
He walked with Gwal and his men then to the great doors of Caer Hyveidd and watched him carefully mount his great white stallion. His men gathered round him, and as the assembled people in the courtyard parted, leaving a wide road for them, they slowly walked through the main gates and rode out of sight. Puig walked back inside and gently took Rhiannon by the hand. They walked together to stand before the ancient king, and Puig laid his sword at the old man's feet.
"My lord, I lay my allegiance alongside your house, and I ask that your druids make fast the hand of your daughter and myself.
So shall it be, my son. My daughter has made her choice. Let the druids be called.
They came then, such druids as Pwych had never seen before, creatures of light and shadow, glimmering like reflections in crystal, and seemingly with no fixed form. They spoke in a tongue that Pwych could not hear with his ears, but only feel inside his body, the meaning being instantly clear. Pwych and Rhiannon spoke their vows to each other, such words and thoughts as are only privy to the gods themselves, and were tied together, as they were tied hand to hand and heart to heart. Together they walked back to the top table, and sat down together in the rich cushions of the high seats, holding their bound hands high. A great cheer went up from Pwych's true and proud companions, and they all seated themselves on the other side of the hall with the Fey nobles, as servants rushed to clear away and reset the feast for the coming celebrations. They all sat down to meet then, just as they had a year ago, with good wishes and blessings on their marriage coming from all in the hall. The minstrels played many a merry tune, and they all sang and danced far into the night. As the fresh sound of early dawn birds began to creep into the mighty hall, Pwych stood and held out his hand to Rhiannon to help her rise. She took it and stood by his side, gazing into Pwych's eyes with the fathomless look that only women, some of the Fey folk, and the gods can understand, but a look that made Pwych's knees weak.
My lady?
My lord.
They walked together through the golden corridors until they came to the bridal suite, where Pwych, sweeping his lady into his arms, carried her tenderly towards the bed. In our next episode, Pwych and Rhiannon return to Dyfed to find out that a bed of roses can sometimes contain a few thorns.
Oh, that was absolutely lovely. I'm so pleased they got together. But I'm a bit worried about what's going to happen now.
Trouble is definitely just on the horizon, though.
We'll have to wait and see then.
Yep. But first, have we got any listener feedback?
We have. Here's a very interesting question posed by Helen from London. Have a listen.
Hello, it's 65-year-old Helen from London. And I'm trying to find out, because I'm of Irish and Scottish descent, if the stories that my ancestors told were fact or fiction.
Hi, Helen. What an interesting question.
It is, isn't it? So what do you think?
Well, firstly, thank you for the question, Helen. It was kind of you for taking the time to talk to us by using that widget on our website. Now, most people will tell you that the manuscripts that we base our stories on are the myths and legends of our ancestors.
So you mean they're all fiction or just all stories?
Well, actually, I think it's a lot more complicated than that.
You do?
Yeah. Well, we know that the job of the bards and the Shanachis was not only to remember and pass on these stories, but also all the genealogies and histories of their tribes. Now, I find myself wondering whether what we have in these 1,000-year-old stories is a dimly remembered history of what actually happened. I mean, you've heard of Chinese whispers.
You mean what happens when one person says one thing and then passes the story on, and so that by the time it's reached the 10th person, it's almost a totally different story?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So maybe the invasions, the battles we've heard about, actually did happen in one form or another. What do you think?
Well, I think anything's possible. And I definitely think that there is some truth behind these stories. Some of it's just too accurate for the timing as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So I personally think there's something of great value there. But I have another theory.
You do? Okay, what's that?
Well, if these stories actually originate from somewhere deep within our subconscious minds, our dream worlds, as it were.
Yeah.
It might be that the characters and events of these stories are actually replaying important events deep within our own psyches, mythic stories that teach us about ourselves and how to behave with others and the world that we live in.
Ah, So they are true and factual in the sense that they come from a deep, universal pool of knowledge?
Yes, kind of. Like the pool that Salmon of Wisdom swims in.
They may be a mixture of all three things as well, I suppose. Mm. Some are long-repeated histories, some are allegories, and others are just fiction.
Yes, that's a possibility. Especially if the amount of material we've got is so vast.
It is, isn't it? It's going to take us years to get through it all.
And nobody really knows anything for definite.
No, of course they don't, such a long period of time.
Mm.
Either way, that was a really great question, Helen. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Helen. We hope that goes a little way towards answering your question. Although we do realise it might have actually ended up confusing you even more.
Sorry about that. So, tell me, have you found a promo for us?
Yes. How do you fancy a travel show that covers all manner of Irish customs and traditions? What a visitor to the Emerald Isle needs to know, and all sorts of fun facts and hidden places to visit.
Mm. That sounds amazing.
Well, have a listen to Liam and Corey from the Irish Fireside podcast at irishfireside.com. And although I haven't managed to find a promo, one of their very first shows from 2006 is only small and gives you a brilliant flavour of what to expect. Have a listen.
Hi, everyone. It's Liam and Corey here from the Irish Fireside podcast. We're busy getting things ready for our next episode, but wanted to take a moment to let you know what we're working on and give you a little bonus feature from the Irish Fireside factoid file. In episode 2, we'll be visiting Bunratty Castle and Folk Park, where we'll show you how to get past all the touristy stuff and make the most of your visit. Of course, we've got a few lesser-known sites in the area that we're going to share, as well as a recipe that's guaranteed to keep you warm and toasty on a cold Irish night.
Now that podcast will be ready for you next week, so be sure to check back then, or you can make it even easier by subscribing to our podcast.
Now we're going to take a peek into the Irish Fireside Factoid file. Today's topic, that popular Irish toast, sláinte.
Did you know, each time an Irishman or woman raises their glass and says sláinte, they are drinking to your health. So when you find yourself lucky enough to be in such fine company, raise your glass and return the blessing. Now another toast, Uisce Baja. Well, it isn't really a toast at all. It's actually the Irish phrase for whiskey. Its exact translation, well, water of life, of course.
That's all for now. But while you're waiting for our next podcast, how about you visit us at irishfireside.com? We'd love to hear your feedback.
I've been looking at what they've got in their archives, you know. They've got some amazing shows. Apps for your phone, when's the best time to visit Ireland, what you can expect at Shannon Airport, as well as some super video podcasts.
Have we got anything else before we go?
Yes, we have.
Mm.
We've had a donation.
Wow, excellent.
Yes, we'd like to say an enormous thank you to Andrew. What a help you've been. Andrew, thank you very, very much indeed.
Yes, that covered our new hard drive, didn't it?
It did. It did.
We can continue with the shows, folks. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Super.
Now, we don't have anything else, do we?
I don't think so. So, does that mean we come to an end?
I think it does.
Okay.
In that case, we will wish our listeners many blessings and say...
Húil Vóir
or
sláinte.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Anne Roos, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bar, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.